The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show for this Friday, the 20th of February, 2026. I do hope you are very well indeed. And because it is Friday, we're going to be joined very shortly by our Friday panel, and we're going to be discussing some of the big stories and issues of the day and week. We want you involved in that conversation, of course. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. If you prefer, you can email comments@highlandradio.com. And of course, you can watch the programme. Hop on over to YouTube. You can watch Highland Radio Ireland on your smart devices, on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and we're across Facebook as well. Right, let's say good morning to Magella McFadden, manager of the Creasla Community Association Links Hub. Good morning to you, Magella. Thank you so much for your time.
How are you?
It's great to have you with us. We're also joined by Fine Gael councillor Martin Harley, Cathaoirleach of the Lifford Stranooler Municipal District. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Jillian.
Thanks so much for joining us. And John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you, Greg.
Great to have you on board with us. Right. This week, the CCPC recommended to lift the ban on private car ride sharing. I wonder, should we embrace an Uber-style model to fix Donegal's chronic taxi shortage, or would opening the market to part-time amateur drivers unfairly dismantle the livelihoods of the professional drivers who've invested thousands in regulating and wheelchair-accessible vehicles, etc.? And it is worth noting that the Transport Minister, Dara O'Brien, has already poured scorn on these proposals. But hey, if there's enough public sentiment, I'm sure those that can be changed. I'm going to start with you, if that's all right, Martin, because, of course, you're also heavily involved with the Vintners Federation and a licensee as well. So you might have a particular interest in this story. Would you welcome such a move?
Yeah, definitely would welcome such a move. And in fairness, I think it's the last 3, if not 4 years of the Vintners Federation AGM. There's been motions at the AGM regarding taxis, that it's taxi service, especially for rural Ireland. I know it'll probably be the Dublin taxi drivers will come out the heaviest against this. But as everybody knows, like, you go to other countries and you've got Uber, you've got Bolt, you've got different services. And what I would say is, we're not trying to deregulate it. We still need regulations in place. But I mean, if you ring an Uber or a Bolt in another country, the photograph of the driver comes up on your phone as you've ordered it. You know exactly who's taking you, who's lifting you. You have all their details on your phone. It's a very safe system, very safe. You jump into a taxi in London or Glasgow, anywhere at all, you don't actually know who. A lot of times the nameplate may not be visible. So,
and whilst, of course, I recognise the fact that you're highlighting the potential security benefits of it, listen, that's a fantastic element of it. But I presume, come kicking out time, you know, you've got a lot of customers in the pub industry that are looking for ways home. There's only a certain amount of taxis around at that time. Many taxis only choose to operate during the day as well, too. And people are sat there wondering, how am I going to get home if they've enjoyed a drink?
Well, not alone that, Greg, people getting home. People are deciding not to go out because they say, no, I'm not bothering going out because I don't even know if I'll get a taxi home. And that's a big issue. I know there's one particular town, Donegal, one of the top 6 or 7 towns, Donegal, I'm not named, but there's only 3 taxis in it. There's 3 or 4 hotels in the same town. So we're probably very lucky in the Twin Towns because we have 2 very good taxi companies. We could have 10 or 12. They could have 10 or 12 vehicles on every night. Like, so we're not the worst, but I know myself from Vintners meetings in Donegal that there are a lot of towns that people are saying, and I know myself, people say, I'd say to you, especially if I'm busy on big nights like Boxing Night or Easter Sunday, and you say to people maybe the week, did you go out? No, this is wouldn't be bothered because you probably wouldn't get home. Afraid to get a taxi home. So that's, and the decision you're making, get home to 3 or 4 in the morning because you're waiting on taxi. So that is a big issue, and it's stopping people going out. And if it's stopping people going out, it's mean that there's less people in there. I mean, the pub industry is dying on its feet as it is. And if people are afraid to go out because they can't get home, then it's going to be, it's losing jobs as well.
Yeah, and even I think where there are taxis, they maybe have their regulars, and there could be certain areas that have a lot of people in at the weekend that aren't necessarily local, and whatever taxis are there sort of are ticking over with the people that they know, and it means other people can't get home. And then people from 4 or 5 kilometres away or even a kilometre away are staying at home. And we heard examples of that on this programme not too long ago. Magella McFadden, what do you think?
Well, I would agree with Martin. You know, in a rural community, we have one service here between Chrysler and Dunfanaghy. And to have this ride-sharing or Uber options, I think, would only complement rather than replace. We only have the one service. And the threat of rural isolation here, you know, as Martin says, we have people that cannot get to the pub in an evening, can't get out, and it's their only lifeline here in a rural community. So it's affecting the hospitality industry, and I definitely don't see it as a threat to competition when there is no competition outside of the bigger towns.
But I think what Martin was saying there is that we could be, the reason we won't get this in areas where clearly there is a shortage of taxis or no taxis at all is because the big lobby groups might be Dublin-based and they're fighting for runs to the airport and runs to here, there and everywhere. But it doesn't, you know, there's almost like a rural-urban issue here in terms of taxi provision.
Well, again, and this is why we should have the Uber availability to us. I mean, it's we're always looking at the bigger towns and the bigger cities and what it will do to them. But it's the rural communities here in Donegal, once again, we're always left shouting. We're left behind. We need this. Mm-hmm. The people need it here. And I don't see any threat with it.
Before I bring John in, Martin, you know, we try and come up with solutions to other problems, like, say, for instance, the short-term letting. You know, the rules will apply to towns with a population greater than 20,000 or whatever. Can we not have some sort of a regulatory system here whereby this wouldn't apply to certain towns over 20,000, say, for an instance? You know what I mean? We come up with what seems to be some sort of compromise, whether people like it a lot in other areas, but it's either or with this. It's kind of the same with the hotel industry or VAT rates. There are ways that we could look after rural Ireland, but at the same time recognise that things might be different in an urban environment.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult to do that, Greg, but I understand the thinking behind that. But you know, at the end of the day, if there's not enough business there, people just won't set up anyway. You know, I mean, that's the facts of it. I mean, but
the towns that we're talking about, right, you might have one or two or three taxis that will do the runs, and they're fantastic. They'll take people to the GPs or the dispensary or whatever, or back from the bus with the shopping. But they choose to work in daylight hours. They might start at 8, knock off at 6, right? Then there's this gap, you know, whereby someone could work maybe 6 hours a week, you know, between 12 and 2 a.m. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and make a living.
Yeah, well, there's options there, you know, and there is, I would say, a lot of places where people are operating, but it's not legally at the minute.
Okay.
This is up in America.
To jump in there and say as well that the service that we have here is great, but it's not sufficient come the summer months either. So again, you know, our local pubs and restaurants and our camp up the road here.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a designated driver as well, so you're impacting on your tourist.
Yeah, if you're in that camp and you say, right, this night we're going to go into Dunfanaghy, how do you get there? And I get where you're coming from, John McAteer.
Good morning.
Good morning, John. What do you think?
It's all about footfall. It's all about out in Fanatier. I wouldn't have a single taxi contact number in my phone book. They're just not there. It's the same across rural Ireland. Footfall, Martin will tell you that. It affects the pubs, it affects hospitality. It's also a very expensive business to get a taxi placed. Now, the talk of Uber and all of these things is fine and well. I wouldn't have any objections whatsoever to that. But I don't see that happening easily, because you need money. To get to Letterkenny from here is about €140. And you're talking that maybe several times a week. People are using Local Link, but that's in daylight hours. I suppose they use it a bit at night as well, because I would meet the Local Link bus about coming into Kirriekeel there around midnight at the weekends anyway. But no, it's going to be a big, big problem. The days of the rural taxi driver they're just numbered.
But do you think the taxi lobby is so strong? Well, it must be, because we've already got, this is the competition authority saying we should do this, but Dara O'Brien already saying, this ain't happening.
Well, I don't expect anything from Dara O'Brien. He wants to stick with the status quo. That's his problem. But we don't have a taxi service in rural Ireland. That has long since disappeared. Back in the day, the band would have had five or six taxis. Some of those would have a couple of cars on the road. If that's gone, you might manage to get a taxi at this hour of the morning to go to a health centre or something like that, or to go into Milford. But no, to all intents and purposes, I don't know if Uber or Bolt or any of those things are any answer to it. You know,
but the idea of Uber would be that if I sort of passed Garda checking and if my vehicle was deemed to be fit, I could sign up with Uber and, you know, get a note saying John McAteer wants to head from home into Milford. I click OK, go and pick you up, blah, blah, and work when I want to work or not work when I want to work. But I presume the idea, you deregulate it a bit, that people would see there's a lot of money to be made around Ballybuffet or Downing's or Glenties or wherever it might be on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday night and meet the need that's there.
Oh, yeah, but like at the same time, what about every other night in the week? Friday, Saturday nights might be okay. In most rural areas, they wouldn't be. Therefore, it wouldn't be economic for someone to...
But the idea is that this is your own car sitting outside the house. You know, you don't have... you know what I mean? It literally is your Monday to Friday car, and you just are allowed by the state to use it to do some... It's like Airbnb for cars, almost. Like.
So why would taxi companies want to pay 5,000-6,000 for insurance and for a taxi plate, if that's the case?
Now we're getting down to the nub of the problem, you see. This is.
I think those are outdated. You know, it's outdated regulatory structures that you're talking about there, John.
See, like, that's not the point, Magella. They've been there forever. It's going to be up to the minister to make a decision on that, and he already has made it, and that's not going to happen unless there's a huge lobby that wants the taxi business totally deregulated. You know?
But is that the solution, Martin? Deregulation? I mean, we can't keep going on with the same system if it's not meeting the needs of the public just because it's there.
Deregulation of the taxi industry happened in the year 2000. I mean, it was massive. That time, before the year 2000, a taxi plate in Dublin was worth about 100,000. After the deregulation of 2000, a lot of the taxi men left the market because the plates weren't worth, they were worthless. Mm. So, I mean, there was a call there. Uber operates in Dublin, and they put in a call before Christmas that there was a price fixing, a certain price, and the taxi companies in Dublin went against that as well because they said that doesn't allow for traffic and all that there. So they didn't want.
How it works in Dublin's not Uber at all, really. It's just another way of getting it. But let me talk to you about, let's deregulate it. It's not working. Right, why should I travel from Capri to your pub? Let's deregulate the pub industry. I know there is a pub in that area too, don't get me wrong, but let's pretend there isn't. And I can open a pub in my garage then, and it means people can get out for a drink to my garage and just walk two doors up the road to home. Do you know what I mean? A taxi person might say, let's not deregulate the taxi industry, let's deregulate the pub industry, and we can have pubs, commercial pubs in houses in every village in the country.
Unfortunately, Greg, there is pubs in every house in the country because people can't get out of the house, and the supermarkets are selling more drink than the pubs are.
Yeah.
And if you stand outside any supermarket, there's more drink come out of the supermarkets than come out of every pub in Ireland. And that's the facts of the matter. And that's why there's hundreds of pubs closing every month in Ireland.
I just think it's really interesting as to how sort of politics can work in this country. Finally, before we take a break and move on, like, the competition authority is there for this type of reason. Like, for you to then have a Minister for Transport to come out within hours and say, this is not happening, no chance. without saying, OK, this is a platform to discussion. Let's bring some people in. Let's and find out what the story is. It's, how could anyone have so much knowledge like Dara O'Brien to chuck out a suggestion like this that so much thought and so much thought and research has gone into, and to throw it out immediately all on his own without even the possibility of a conversation or a discussion? That's a problem with politics, isn't it?
It is a big problem. And unfortunately, the CCPC that done the survey during December, 4 out of 10 people found it difficult to get a taxi during the month of December. So, I don't know how we can... I suppose it's back to the big lobby groups that are... I suppose Dara O'Brien's taking advice from some civil servants saying, no, you can't do... We need to. What should be said is we should. Well, let's have a look at this.
The CCP
let's,
have been working on this. The CCP have been working on this for months, Magellan. Yeah. At least say, you know, all right, let's have a conversation about it. Like, if such a unilateral decision is being made on this, it starts to make you understand how such a decision could be made about the cancer flights from that same department, for an example.
Well, I have to agree, and I was just going to bring that up, Greg. You know, these decisions, and it's pretty much the same as the SNA issue as well. These decisions seem to be made and signed off on before we know about them. And it feels like, and particularly for those cancer flights, it feels like, you know, one thing we're good at here in Donegal, we're great at getting behind the likes of Mary Coyle and people in Gidore, and this is a countywide problem. But the decision's been made. So are we wasting our time? And I hate to say that, I don't want to say that, but it feels like this is just another example.
Yeah.
The decision was already made at top level, and here we are now trying to fight. Is it flogging a dead horse? I don't know.
The pub industry, says the listener, is dying on its feet because of the price of drink. It's far too dear. And the price of taxis, too dear. So that's why people are choosing to stay home. And quite frankly, it's far better crack having people around to our house for a few drinks at the weekend so the vintners and the taxi men can keep their overpriced drink and taxis. Their input charges for pubs are huge, let's not forget. And we're talking about places where taxis simply aren't available. I sent this above message last August. There are no taxi services for anyone in 90% of rural towns. Most have no taxi service. None in Rathmullen, Remelton, Kerry, Keele, Fannad, Downings, Carrigart. Why can't there be a push for rural Ubers? Now, there are some taxis in the areas mentioned. No enjoyment going for dinner or drinks with friends. This adds to drink driving. Yes, there is a local link in some areas, but it's not adequate. Pubs and restaurants closing, never mind new businesses opening. We'll come back to that. Now, a number of institutions in Donegal had posted Ramadan Mubarak, but removed the posts following negative backlash from the public. Donegal County Council also posted a similar sentiment with criticism of the post garnering hundreds of... it wasn't messages of support, hundreds of negative comments. Do organisations need to be more inclusive in their messaging, or do we need to be more sensitive to minority groups and their beliefs? John McAteer.
No matter what you're going to put up like that there, it's going to draw an avalanche of criticism. There'd be absolutely no reason to criticise people saying Happy Ramadan or anything like that. It's their month of fast, and it's their holy month of fast. And we have reached that pitch in society that there's a negativity out there towards that kind of thing. I didn't hear anybody criticising Lent today.
But I didn't see any posts from schools and the council saying, you know, best of luck with Lent.
No, it's a strange thing that, or do they bother much about Lent now?
No, they don't. And I think that's what's angering people, that this is virtue signalling.
Well, like, that's what it is, exactly. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Ramadan being celebrated or being marked as a month of fast. So, I mean, people who are at that should cop themselves on.
And not sort of post it unless you're going to be ultra-inclusive and post similar messages for different types of religions and events, or just scrap it altogether, John?
Now, people, it's not going to get scrapped altogether because, like, it's on social media there. And people feel free to do these kind of things. Why shouldn't they do it? What damage are they doing? I mean, it's a friendly thing to do to your neighbour who may be a Muslim or some other religion. So, like, keep on doing it. Why not?
All right, so you support these messages, because a couple of them were taken down, such was the negative backlash.
That doesn't help just to take them down. I mean, we've been far, far too snowflake in that regard. Why put them up in the first place?
Well, there's maybe because we're being so snowflakey, and we're trying to be ultra woke and ultra inclusive, and getting it wrong because we're not recognising the fact that this is going to pee off the majority of people that don't get the same type of sentiments. Best of luck with Lent, everybody. You'll recognise Easter. Let's hope you have a peaceful Easter. You won't see the council post that, will you?
Or even St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, well, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I can understand that, but like, some people are very easily annoyed, obviously, and it's irrelevant that people should be criticised for just putting up a very basic post.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Martin Hartley, what do you think? Were the council right in posting that message? I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's up there anyway. I can get it for you if you haven't. And also, too, can you understand how people seem to be pushing back at it, because there doesn't seem to be the same recognition of Christian events, for an example?
We all wish each other a happy Christmas or a happy St. Patrick's Day. I mean, we do that. Are we going to stop saying we don't wish each other a happy St. Patrick's Day or a happy Christmas? I mean, the fact is, I didn't actually know. I know of Ramadan, but Ramadan Mubarak, until I looked it up, I thought it means a month full of blessings, mercy, forgiveness, and spiritual growth. Now, I don't think what's anything wrong saying that to anybody. I mean, I think that's...
I think it's the absence of the same type of...
I agree totally with John. I mean, it's...
Do you not understand that people might look at that and go, okay, that's fine, but where are the same sentiments towards the Christian community, for an example?
Well, happy Christmas. I mean, it's, you're wishing everybody a happy, peaceful Christmas, and we wish everybody a happy and healthy New Year and good health and good luck to all your family in the new year. We do that.
But can you imagine that Donegal County Council putting up a post saying we wish everyone a peaceful and happy Easter?
Yeah, well, they do put up messages at different times of the year. From I know in the year that I was mayor, we would have put up different messages at different times for wishing everybody and happy Christmas and different things. So I think a lot of ones that would have criticised it don't actually know what Ramadan Mubarak means. Mm. They didn't look it up to see actually what the wording means. And I think that is the problem. And you have, there's people out there that it's... Mm.
It's just, I think, a sense, people get a sense that we celebrate some religions, but we don't seem to celebrate Christianity in this country. And they look at it and go, well, is this... You know, we're constantly bending over backwards to be inclusive and recognise other people's, you know, spiritual windows. But you don't see, I know you're going to reference Happy Christmas, but I mean, I think that's a solely Christian thing to say to someone, if you know what I mean. So do you understand why people might think that this is another dilution of Christianity?
I don't put any money on it. Most of the people that have commented on that have not stood at the altar rails of a Catholic church, I'll say, in the last 30 years. So I don't, from they had their confirmation or from they were at the last weddings the last time. I let those people just go over my head, because I don't think they're worth wasting energy on.
Okay, Magella, what do you think?
You know, I think we're trying so hard to be inclusive now, which is a great thing, that this has probably just maybe, you know, by removing the posts, it's speaking louder than if we had just left them alone in the first place. So really, we're just trying, and the small minority...
I think the problem is, though, it's called being ratioed on social media, right? So you put up one post when it's supposed to be all lovey-dovey, peace and love to all, and you get hundreds of comments. What effectively is a school, for an example, becomes a platform for negativity against a group of people. But that's arguably been brought onto them themselves. If you're going to do that, do it for Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, do it for Christians. do it for whatever. Do you know what I mean? If you only recognise, seemingly recognise I can't remember the phraseology, but a festival or whatever it might be of one group of individuals and they happen to be a minority group, you're going to get the backlash, Magella. I mean, that's...
Well, I just, yeah. I think we're focusing on this a little bit too much. It was put out there. It's a respectful thing. This is our friends and our neighbours. We're just trying to be inclusive. And the council or whomever, whatever organisation was putting out Ramadan Mubarak, that's, they're trying to be inclusive. We're now honing in on this and the negative impact. You know, next week it'll be something else. I think we're just giving it too much.
So there's no lessons to be learned here, do you think? Any of you know, do you not think there's any lessons to be learned here? Because we can't just, I'm not saying yous are, but we can't just sort of disregard the views of hundreds upon hundreds of people that think that this is, you know, that, well, we don't necessarily mind this, but where's the love for the Christians? No, you don't think?
There is a love for Christians out there. I think it's I don't know, we have, if you're in Letterkenny Hospital tomorrow morning and somebody that's celebrating Ramadan was looking after you, I don't think you would be...
But you see, this is the thing I don't understand, especially places with big PR companies. That's exactly why you don't do things like this. Because instantly it sparks division or issue. John, do you not understand yourself that you know, Martin's example there, this actually might foster bad feeling when you go into that hospital because it doesn't seem to be an equal respect for all religions. If you're going to do it for all religions. If you're not, don't do it.
Well, you can't get past the poor Christians. You know, there's billions of them out there. I wouldn't find anything at all objective about saying Happy Ramadan to anybody. Not that I would be saying it, because I don't know too many like that. But in reality, this is just a reactive... These are the keyboard warriors with a reactive mindset, and they don't want anybody to celebrate anything. Mm. And like to a great extent, it's hardly worth our time talking about.
Well, I actually really disagree, because I think we need to build a country that is respectful to all, that has no hate, that has no racism, and has an understanding of all of our cultures. And I don't think this is the way of doing it, because...
No, but like generally speaking, 99%, are we not doing that anyway?
Well, I think sometimes posts like that pull back the curtain, because we're not necessarily talking... I mean, we're talking... People who have posted on that are the head of major business organisations. This isn't... You know, it's across the board. But anyway, listen, I respect your views, and being inclusive to arrivals into the state, 9,500 and 6,000... I'll have to come back to that one. The issue is the council proving they are putting other religions and citizens above Irish citizens. That's what one person feels, another. Okay, let's go. Happy 12th of July then, Greg. A minority in Donegal, aren't they? This is a minefield, isn't it? Well, we would generally have some programming recognising that time of the year as well. But anyway, we aren't the council. Parents in Buncrana are going to join thousands around the country. They're still taking to the streets next week, despite the government's pause on SNA cuts. Magella, I'll put it to you, Magella McFadden, manager of the Creasler Community Association Links Hub. Is this pause anything more than a temporary political shield to get through the next few months without addressing what is the crisis in our classrooms?
Who knows, Greg? It goes back to what we talked about before. These decisions are put out there. We welcome them, and then they're paused. But I know here in our local schools, the importance of the SNA, the need, we need them. Our teachers, you know, can't do their job without them. And so I commend the people in Buncrana for taking to the streets next week. But again, has a decision been made? And we're just fighting against the wind.
John McAteer, what do you think about this story? I'm sure you've plenty of contacts into the newsroom on it.
Absolutely. Like you and me and various other elements have fought these cases. We fought one in Kirikil last September. Beautiful child, type A diabetic, was going to lose her SNA, and to an extent did, but that situation is still not fully resolved, like as in many schools, because you might have one SNA where a child needs one-to-one attention and observation. You can't have that SNA looking after another child because they can't do both. There are issues around the whole area of SNA, and obviously we don't have enough of them. And I congratulate the schools in Buncrana and the parents who are taking this issue next week. And I just wish them well with that, because maybe we don't have enough of that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the days of protest and people going to big meetings is literally gone. There are issues. The whole SNA thing needs a full written branch review, from what I can see. There are always schools living in fear. They're on that borderline. Do we lose one or do we gain one? They're more likely probably at the moment to lose one. And I think this is where the issue is, that there might be as many as 200 nationally been lost, despite what the government and what the minister is saying here. The fact that they've paused it, Hildegard Norton's department, that there's something wrong. That's an admission that they've got it wrong. So why don't they own up and just give us a total figure of how many we're short or how many too many we have?
See, I think the problem they have is, this is just a brief overview, in that we've been allocating SNAs a certain way for the last number of years and we've become used to it. Now they haven't changed the guidelines. They're looking to enforce the guidelines. And what it means is that the likes of your case in Kerikeel, John, that child might likely get an SNA for one-on-one because that's going to be the priority in the allocation of them. But like in the school in Buncrana that we were speaking to, there's 28 children that require the assistance of an SNA. But really, if you looked at the actual guidelines, they're potentially not actually entitled to one. Hence, that school potentially losing an SNA. But we've 25,000 SNAs. Surely that's not a shortage. And the government's committed to hire more, John.
Yeah, like it has gone up from about 18,000 5 years ago. I don't know how realistic that assessment is, because we haven't been given a figure how many SNAs have left the service. We haven't been given a figure of how many extra children need the services of an SNA in their school. And I think it's a very grey area when it comes down to an official decision. They're likely to come down on the side of being negative and taking away that SNA. Parents aren't asking for very much, to be quite honest. We can well afford it. And at the end of the day, that child in Kirikil had to be taken out of school last year for after 3 weeks. And it was never fully resolved. There was a solution, but not a full resolution.
Well,
you know,
see, what happens in these cases, it's like, and I'm not necessarily in that case, it's like, right, you can have your way, but I hope you're happy because five other kids aren't going to get an SNA now. You know what I mean? And it's pitching, you know, children with additional needs against those without, or those with perhaps less additional needs, if I could put it crudely.
You know something, we're living in an era where it should be all inclusivity, and any child that can go to school should go, and thankfully most of them are able to do that. But in sending them to school, parents need to be fully reassured that they're monitored and looked after, and in cases that is not happening. And the school principal, they're all been put in a very invidious position here. It's almost as if we must make that decision because you're not getting that SNA.
Yeah.
You know,
you decide where it goes then. Yeah, okay. Martin Harley, what's your view? Councillor Martin Harley.
Yeah, I was looking at the figures, and as John said, like 25,000 SNAs in schools this September. That's 1,700 more than in 25. Every county will have more than they had in 25. And I know it's like you hit the nail on the head there. Maybe the rules were a bit vague and maybe they weren't being enforced. But now they're saying, well, this is the criteria for the SNA. And I think it's 3 billion in the budget this year for special education. No, so I'd say if we look back 10 years ago, I would say that figure. it wouldn't have been touching a billion probably, but
it's not necessarily the input. It's not necessarily the input though, it's the output, right? So it could be a billion, or it could be 500 grand. It's what's coming out that's I know the reason why you reference it, but it's what's coming out is the problem here.
Yeah, see, I look at these things and then I look at the bigger issue is how come we're not looking at the health issues in here at all as to why are there so many children with special needs? Mm. I mean, I've talked to teachers about this down the years, and I just can't get. I mean, there's figures for California that one in six children born will have special needs in California. Yeah, see, and I worry about that. I wonder why is this mean.
Well, I mean, I think lots of people listening might have a little bit of an insight, but it's a very controversial space to start talking about. You know, if you, let's just say, obviously, this is notwithstanding there are children with additional needs. But if 20 children, randomly pick 20 children out of 3 or 4 year olds, 4 or 5 year olds, and had them assessed under the current criteria, is it likely that the overwhelming majority of them would be found to be in some way or other requiring additional needs? Is that what you're saying? Is it? Are we overdiagnosing it, or do you believe that there's something triggering additional needs that we're actually only finding out now? Majella, do you have an insight into that, or a view?
Well, I think I'm with Martin there on the question is why. Why are there so many? Why has there been such an increase in a short space of time? I mean, 1 in 6 in California, he mentions there. We have built a room in the school here in Chrysler for children with additional needs. And to think now that the SNA numbers, that they could take this away, having built this room that is absolutely needed. It's difficult, and it's probably slightly controversial to answer that, and maybe for another day's debate. But it doesn't solve the issue at the minute.
I think really what also needs to be recognised in a lot of these cases, across the board it seems, is listen to parents. You know, listen to teachers. I mean, obviously you can't give everybody everything that they need, okay? But, you know, like I mentioned the cancer flights, and we discussed that a couple of weeks in the trot and during the week. But, you know, listen to the people that need that service or use that service. In this case, listen to Fiona, like we had on the programme yesterday, and understand the reality of what these cuts might mean. Listen to the lady from Kerrykeeljohn, I believe, who had a choice, you know, risk it with the child in school or take the child out of school and have no education and spend your entire life.
Like, what frightens me about that kind of thing there is that when a child needs one-to-one counselling or one-to-one supervision, if their insulin levels are going to drop, it could have major and serious consequences. That child has every right to be at school, regardless how healthy or how unhealthy they may be, if they're deemed, and that child loves being at school. Who are we to deny that? I mean, we're in a country here rolling in money.
Yeah.
You know, like at the end of the day, people's rights, as Majella talks about the special needs rooms, they're everywhere. But they're there for a very good, genuine purpose. They're needed because children are now part of the wider education system, and they should not be denied something because they have a disability.
In fact,
they should be cherished.
Given your sort of background in services, John, what do you, or do you have you thought about what you might attribute this very, very dramatic increase in children being identified with an additional need or other?
Back in the day, 50 years ago, those children were hidden away and forgotten about.
Yeah.
Sadly. And because we have an improved health system, children would have died at birth and all these kind of things. Now all children, we cherish all the children of the nation equally, and we have to go on doing that. It's not a huge, big price at the end of the day, but there's probably too much officialdom in there. There's too many rules and regulations to be followed, and it's been thrown onto the schools themselves and been thrown onto the principal, who have decisions to make that they have to choose between one disability and another to be more relevant and deciding who gets help. That should never be the case in Ireland.
It never should be the case, because we've done a good job in education, we've done a good job in special needs, but stop penny pinching. Cut out that carry on.
It's astonishing too that we can't get these things right when you consider we are a population of a medium-sized city, just a medium-sized British city, with the income of an enormous country.
But you know something? You have parents 2 years before the child goes to play school, let's say they're hardly born, and they're diagnosed with an issue of special need. Parents are doing their rounds for 2 years before they even go to play school. And then they get to play school for a couple of years, and all of a sudden, now that they're moving on to something else, they're being excluded. And that is happening and has been happening, and that's wrong.
Okay.
You know, so that's why I would hope that so many people that have those issues get over to Bunacrana next week and be part of that bigger meeting that might do something at that kind of a scale. That would, highlighting these issues right now is very, very important, because you see, we're looking now to next year, to next September. We are who we are for this current school year. We're not going to get too many more SNAs. And as the government said, we can't pay them. I haven't heard that, but it could be a factor.
Well, they're funded. There was a huge fund in it. But and just finally, as we wrap up, though, Majella, you know, this is at the beginning, potentially, arguably, but not just at the beginning through the school years. And then we've got, you know, we're investing millions upon millions into a great new facility like the Little Angels School, but it not being big enough to even meet current demand, let alone what might be needed into the future. You know, we really need to, start, you know, getting this right. It's such a critical issue.
Well, yeah, I mean, we should have been getting it right before buildings are opened up, and we don't have enough room. It's easy to say that, I guess, but I think I'd like to go back to, we need to look at where are these additional needs? Where is this coming from? Are we educating our parents? Are we educated enough in what we're giving our children, what we're taking ourselves, how to be healthier? I just see there's a massive increase in a very short space of time.
And none of you would attribute it that to the diagnosis criteria being too wide, and that there's some sort of element of a commercial side to this, you know. There's a lot of different disciplines, a lot of public and private. I'm not even suggesting that for a moment, but before we start talking about what we're eating and how we're raising our kids, we're satisfied that there isn't an overdiagnosis. Is that fair to say?
I think that's very fair to say. There is an official side to it, and that is the minister's office who's looking after this, and the parents and the schools themselves. I mean, if you're going to build a fine facility and it's already too small, as you said, at the Little Angels, there's something fundamentally wrong in how we're managing this system.
Yeah.
And our attitudes to special needs might be reappraised and looked at again, and think to ourselves, are we doing enough for them?
Okay.
I don't think that we can ever do enough for them. The very fact that they're able to be in mainstream education at that level, that's the main thing that counts, regardless of the cost.
John McAteer, thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure. Look after yourself. Have a great weekend. And
thank you, Greg, for
putting me in your paper. It was great to see.
You look so well, too.
Not every paper would even post a picture of me, so I do appreciate it.
I noticed that.
Did you notice it?
Yeah.
I can be off some examples of some cropping.
You've got a bit of space for you, had you, John?
Hey, I'm the page 7, mate.
I'm not going to argue with that, Mark.
John McAteer, look after yourself. Bye-bye. Look after yourself as well, Martin. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. And Majella McFadden, a pleasure to have you on. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
And yes, it does indeed. Welcome into the last hour of the programme. On various issues we've been discussing over the last hour, here are some of your views. On the special needs assistance, I think we need to stand up and be counted. SNAs are needed so badly, and our Donegal cancer flights as well. I think we need to get out and protest on the streets of Dublin and show government we mean business. We sit and take everything they throw at us. on the issue of religion. We're all God's children and we are to love one another in the spirit of inclusivity. It was a wasted opportunity by the council to not show support to many Catholics and Church of Ireland members of our school communities embarking on their Lenten journey today in preparation for Easter, the biggest celebration in the church's year. Ireland is forgetting to celebrate its own culture. Public relations, PR, I know it shouldn't come into things like this, but there's a way to do things and there's a way not to do things. And, you know, I think it's wonderful to recognise people of different cultures and different feasts that they might celebrate. But I think if you're going to do that, you do it for all. And then that's true inclusivity. And it removes this sense that there is a hierarchy or that there is one group of individuals that are more important than another group of individuals, or their beliefs are more important than another. And just in the world that we live in now, whether it's right or wrong, that stuff you have to get right. You have to get right. You can combine the messages, you can put up separate messages. But if you're seen to select one or other, like say, for instance, if a post only went up about Easter, for an example, there are a lot of people that would say, well, that's not very nice, is it? That's not making people in this country. That would be seen as maybe as the equivalent of flying flags up a pole. You know what I mean? As if, oh, you're celebrating it and you're making other people feel uncomfortable. But you have to understand that everyone has those feelings too and those sensitivities. And if you're going to do it, you really truly want to be inclusive. And that includes the majority as well. And that's just public relations. I'm not giving anyone a public relations lesson, do not get me wrong, but that's just in this day and age, especially with social media, especially that you're not sending a post to five people, you're sending it to the world. Don't see them wishing us a happy Lent. Wokeness, they describe it as. We stay in Oakfields Cottages, 2 miles outside Remelton every summer. To get a taxi into Remelton from there, we need to ring a taxi from Letterkenny. That comes in for Ronan. Ronan, that doesn't make sense, doesn't it? Staying with taxis for now, we recently got a taxi from Letterkenny one night at 4:30 a.m. in the morning. He left us a mile and a half from the house and wouldn't leave us at the house. Paying him was not an issue, so we paid and had to ring Dad to pick me up. That's strange. That doesn't make sense. Now, maybe is the road in a certain condition? I don't know. Is there any other reason as to why that might not have happened? Because he didn't, or she didn't, fulfil the terms of that agreement. Back to the issues of SNAs. Any parent of a special needs child will tell you they spend their child's life fighting for everything they need, many of which no mainstream child fights for. Another, the number that need SNAs has increased. Reasons for children with special needs, a whole study in and of itself, but probably better diagnosis systems, artificial ingredients, drugs and drink usage, family breakdown, smaller families, parents with poor coping skills, stressed up because of work, lone parents, parental alienation. So many reasons compound together. It's far better to have SNA supports than hiding the child in the back room or shared with little social or education activity, which happened years ago. John McIntyre said that these children existed, they were just hidden away, metaphorically speaking and literally. Anyone checking what is causing the problem that we need all these SNAs that's happening health-wise? Is it vaccines, food, water or what? Always were some down the years. Is that percentage has risen and still is? We have a huge network, though, of diagnostics now that simply wasn't there in the past. That has to be a significant factor. On taxis again, we can only buy a disabled taxi plate because the government put a stop to ordinary plates being bought. I own one at the moment. I can't sell it. I can leave it to a child in my will and they can use it. If I retire, my children can use it, but I'm still responsible for it. The government are responsible for this debacle. Local link services have killed the business during the day and no one wants to work anymore at night because it's too dangerous. If I stop in the morning and my children don't want it, the plate is gone and that's that. Insurance is an issue for taxi people. It's considered private hire. You're not employed by a company and hence self-employed, which makes the cover very expensive. The problem with the taxi system, says another, is over-regulation. The 10-year age limit on taxis is ridiculous. These vehicles are ridiculously tested, yet the plate doesn't accept their own safety testing system. I think, you know, a 2016 car now is not like in the 90s, sort of say 1996, driving an 86 car. I mean, 2016 cars now are I would see them almost as new. Not almost as new, but you understand? They've got all the tech, they've got rust-free parts and all that kind of stuff. I think 10 years is tight now, way too tight. And although the insurance on Uber taxis would be very high, a lot of clients will be able to sue taxis. And although that would be a great idea, as it might waken up the taxis already working, because especially in my area, they won't even answer the phone, never mind pick you up. And other people complain if they have no taxi, but also complain at the price of a taxi. They just don't seem to be happy one way or other. And another, I've been listening to the debate about Uber, and honestly, many of the arguments against it don't hold up. Yes, it may impact traditional taxi companies, but shouldn't we be thinking about what benefits the public? Why should people in Donegal be left with limited options just to protect private business interests? It's time to put people first and give communities more choice. And I'll get to more of those. Shall I do a few on the religion? Because a lot of you text in relation to that. If people have the freedom to celebrate their own religion without dissent, then that's what matters. Another, well, just because people don't attend church regularly does not mean they identify or they don't, does not mean they don't identify as Christians. I agree with Greg. Well, wishes for Ramadan was mentioned by the DETB on Ash Wednesday. No mention of Lent. Same day needs to be an equal setting to worried, too worried about upsetting minorities. But you see, this is the thing. Like minorities, if I could put it to like that, have been dragged into this. You know, they weren't checking local schools or the council Facebook page to see if they got a pat on the back or to see if they were being wished goodwill. All of this negativity has been brought on them. They're just going about their business. They're probably flat out working now and doing whatever they're doing. And now all of this has been brought on to them, if you know what I mean. There's no campaign from, as far as I'm aware, people of a Muslim faith to have a school or a council wish them a good Ramadan. This has been brought on them as well. Let's be very clear about that. I would have heard if there was this massive push, like no one contacted us and say, could you put an advert on for us wishing everyone a happy Ramadan? You know what I mean? It's not of their doing. Anyway, all religions should be considered equal because in truth they are, and really there is no need to express sentiment with a particular religion, says a caller, as it's a highly personal event for those involved. And I'm sure there are people of born into faiths of all faiths that actually don't really agree or share that religion in a day-to-day basis. All right, okay. Now, as I hope you're aware, we have a sister podcast to The Greg Hughes Show, and it is called, would you believe it, The Greg Hughes Podcast. Now, it's available for you, new episodes every Friday from 11 a.m, and we've got loads of fantastic guests lined up, some recorded already, some to come, all different types of people who have massive life experiences or have gone through traumatic experiences or, you know, are just well known or whatever it might be. There's a whole raft of different conversations having had been or to be had, and I've already had. Right, so I think we're on about episode 7 of the podcast plus bonuses, and it's available for you on the playback section of Highland Radio, and we get new episodes every Friday at 11. You're also able to listen to it on your favourite streaming platforms, namely Spotify and iTunes. And you just search The Greg Hughes Show, Highland Radio, on either of those, and you get this show plus the bonus podcasts every single Friday. So maybe you listen to this show live and just want the podcasts, you'll see them there. They're well identified. Now, this is a tough listen this week, I'm not going to lie to you. My guests are Maeve and Ian Gallagher. And very sadly, they lost their beautiful son, Dara. He had a rapid deterioration of his condition and died of strep, effectively. And they had their inquest in the last couple of weeks, and they were hoping for answers. They wanted Now Doc present at that inquest because there was an out-of-hour service element in the diagnostics. They wanted a jury, and the reason they wanted a jury is because I think they wanted the views of maybe people that aren't involved in medicine, if I could put it to you like that there, that might have looked at it from a different perspective. They really want to focus on, you know, other parents not having to go through what they had to go through. And sometimes that involves trusting your gut or getting better information and insisting that this is checked or that's checked. I'm going to play you a wee clip now, as I say, that the entire podcast is live for you at 11 o'clock. But this is part of my conversation with Maeve and Ian Gallagher. And this picks up really, I suppose, from the moments after they went to the out-of-hours service.
I was at home, yeah, when Maeve went to the up to Knowdock, and I was at home when she came back home again. Like, and just, well, Maeve rung when she came out of Knowdock, and I thought, God, that didn't take very long. And it was, obviously Maeve said, everything she's just said to yourself there, Greg, and like, Dara, both had a restless night.
He had a restless night that night.
And we kind of took turns sleeping, well, not sleeping with him, but lying beside him, and he got up on Sunday morning, and we couldn't say he was any worse, but he definitely was no better.
Yeah,
you know.
And did you take comfort from that, or did that make your concerns more so, Maeve?
I had decided at that stage that, you know, I'm going to take tomorrow, the next day off, and go straight to my own doctors, because my own doctors are brilliant, and in the past I've been, they knew about his throat infections, and they would have, I presume, have given me an antibiotic at that stage. It wouldn't have worked if we had got the antibiotic.
But what happened next then?
The day was spent kind of paracetamol. He didn't eat very much. We had him drinking.
He had started drinking.
And at 7:45 that evening, I decided to come on up to bed, because I thought, the two of us need to get to sleep.
Yeah.
And Ian came up
very
then.
Very restless to about 12 o'clock. And
Ian came up with the, he looked for juice.
And I took him up for juice at 12 o'clock, Greg. And that was an hour later, he was gone. So he was.
So quickly, really, in terms of,
he was still talking, like he had one, given me his pillow, put it over me and said, don't need that anymore, mammy. And then a wee while later, I went to pull up his blanket and I could feel his legs were cold, not realising then that there was it setting in. And then a wee while later then I just heard the rattle, and that's when I screamed for Ian. Ian was in my daughter's room that night.
It's very hard. How do you process that? I mean, even now, I mean, it's not, it's completely unnatural. It's horrendous. I mean, you're obviously taken up by this incredible loss. Was there a sense that something was missed here then, at that point? Immediately, that this loss that you have just...
The pathologist in Dublin rang on the
Wednesday when we were...
Dara died in the very early hours of Monday morning. On the Wednesday morning, the pathologist rang and explained that what happened, what it was, and that Dara had strep A, pneumonia, and in the end, sepsis. And there was nothing could be done.
Okay. And incredibly difficult to listen to that, the reality of it. But that's just part of the whole conversation that we had, and I have nothing but admiration for both of them in what they're doing in trying to spread awareness. 12 children at that period passed away, and the question is, was enough done to get information out to parents to sort of say, right, this could be happening, this has happened once here, once there, once here, once there, once here. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 children all over a short period of time. There's a very different approach to how these outbreaks, if you could call it that, are dealt with in other parts of the world too, even just across the border in Northern Ireland, in terms of if there is a case, antibiotics going into classrooms or NINRAs or whatever it might be. We don't necessarily do it that way here. If you want to hear the full conversation with my guests on the Greg Hughes podcast this week. It's live for you on our website, on Spotify and on iTunes from 11 a.m. Anton Begg-O'Connor is the co-writer of Far, its new short feature film about a transgender man in the Donegal Gaeltacht. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Anton, how are you keeping? Right, OK, so talk to me about this film.
So far, we've just been commissioned there recently. It's an Irish language short film.
I beg your pardon. This is yet to be made. So this is, we are at the beginning of the process here. My mistake, sorry.
No, you're all right. It's, basically, we've just been awarded the money from TG Cahare Screen Ireland and Northern Ireland Screen. We submitted an idea, myself and my co-writer, Grace Mulvey, we submitted an idea to their, it's a scheme called POOS, which is the Irish for start. So we submitted an idea for that. Grace and I were writing a sitcom about the Gaeltacht because I'm from Maharorty and my mum's a Banantee, so I would have a huge amount of experience with the Gaeltacht. And Grace went to a few Gaeltacht as a teenager. So the two of us kind of knew each other through stand-up in Dublin, and we decided to write a script together. So we submitted it last February, and we got a bit of time and money to kind of write the script ourselves. So we worked with a really talented script editor in England called Wilson McCall, kind of really finessed it, sent it in for a decision, and we got awarded there just before Christmas. So now we're in the mad thing of actually trying to plan shooting a short film in Donegal at some point over the summer.
Yeah, and what is the criteria for a short film in terms of length?
There are a lot of film festivals won't take stuff that's over like 17, 18 minutes. So it's just, for us, it's kind of, when you're writing, you'll kind of have a sense of what your idea is and what you want to say. And sometimes you don't want to say very much with that. You know, sometimes a short is better. But because we, like in this instance, we had it based off sitcom characters, we're just like, oh, if we put these characters in this funny situation, you know, what, like, that will, that we can say what we want to without kind of, you know, having to make it a big narrative that will draw people in over episodes. Mm. So this one felt like it was just the right message and the right story to tell at this time for everything that's happening in the world. So that's why we kind of chose this one. But I mean, in terms of a short can be kind of as long as people want, but if it's more than 20 minutes, most film festivals won't take it.
Yeah, I get you. So you have to tell this story in a short space, but you've got a good setup, I suppose. A transgender teen visiting the Donegal Gaeltacht. And I suppose, what is it, like a snapshot of an experience? Like, is that how you...
Do you know what? It's somebody who's looking after the Irish College, and it's the first day of the new set, and this trans kid presents themselves as like, and it's kind of about like what house that they should be put in. Is it the boys' house or the girls' house? So that was kind of our thing of, that was our question that like we kind of wanted to answer, because I myself I'm now living in England, and I actually play for a trans football team, and I play for a gay football team as well that has quite a lot of trans players on it, but I also play with a separate trans football team. So it's kind of like hearing their stories and stuff made it really interesting for us, and we're just trying to kind of apply some of the struggles they go through versus, you know, but trying to make it unique to us in Ireland. And I just thought, like, you know, because I'm like, a lot of my friends in Liverpool are trans, but like, I don't know many trans people in Donegal. And I just thought, somebody going to the Gaeltacht and having to interact with people like, you know, my mum, my dad, or my family, or the wider community, of just how that would work if they were 100%, no, I'm a trans person, and just kind of the drama and comedy that would come from that, of somebody who, you know, like, of people who are kind of meaning well but may not necessarily say the right things.
Yeah. Obviously, given the fact that there's a comedic element to this, also the fact that potentially there's a responsibility here to have a positive influence in the narrative, as you might see it, right?
Yeah.
But also in a really short period of time. It's not, you know, that's a lot to get right. But also at the same time, maybe that ultimate focus is how you get exactly out what you want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like we kind of, I think... because Grace and I, like, Grace is a, like, is still like a working stand-up, and I mean she's just done a show in she did a show last year in Edinburgh that Rolling Stone magazine said was like one of the 10 best of the year. She's actually like, she's a touring stand-up, she's in Belfast tonight actually, if I can give her a cheeky wee plug.
Yeah.
But it's so it's like the two of us, because we've got such shorthand, you know, with kind of getting to drama and comedy quite quickly, but also like us knowing a lot of trans people, it made it a lot easier. You know, it's not like I think if we'd made this film maybe 5 years ago, we'd have to kind of do a lot of setup as to what trans people are. But I think kind of now.
But I presume really what you have to approach this as is sort of a almost fish out of water, but also as a holding a mirror up to sort of saying, what are you all fussing about? Now, people have their different views in relation to this, right? But, you know, sometimes the less you dig into that, you can sort of say, well, what is actually this all about?
Exactly. And it's like, you know, it's like, because trans people get a really, really bad rep a lot of the time, and there's still like a huge amount of transphobia. And I think it's like, for me, for especially playing with the trans football team, especially, it was to kind of have my eyes open as to, you know, they're just wanting to get by, same as everyone else. Like, some of them are lovely, some of them are terrible. Do you know what I mean? It's like, they're just no different to anyone else. But to kind of to put out a trans character who is fun and empathetic, you know, but also has flaws, you know, I think we can do something really, really great with this film. So, and I'm just hoping that people will kind of like look at it and view trans people maybe in a different way of kind of, even, you know, if people are making, you know, transphobic jokes and they're like, well, you know, there's no harm in that. Actually, there is, you know, and there can be. And it kind of feeds into the narrative about trans people.
Okay. And when does casting start and all that type of stuff?
So basically, we are hoping to film it, I think, sometime in July, because we need to have it, like, the weather as good, because, like, obviously, if it's set in the Gaeltacht with the new Irish students coming in, we want it to be sunny. And I don't know if you know, Greg, but Donegal's not the warmest, sunniest place in the world. I don't know if
where are you speaking to me from? London, is it?
I'm actually in ITV in Leeds today,
right? Well, so I think it's rained every day in Leeds since Christmas, so you know Donegal well enough. Don't be poking there.
It's glorious sunshine.
All right, okay.
But yeah,
no, so I know what you're on about. But listen, hey, too, it also from a cinematic point of view, it is so beautiful. You want it looking the best. Okay, well, the very best of luck with the project. Presumably, you don't know where it goes yet. You make it, you enter it into certain things because of the funding pathway. Does that mean you will get a sort of a TV screening, or is that all to be determined?
I would presume so with the TV screening. Like, nothing has been kind of set in stone yet, but our kind of aim of it for the team who are making it is that we can kind of use this to show commissioners, you know, maybe there's something in a TV show here, because like I say, myself and Grace were developing a sitcom of it, and then this kind of scheme came up.
So it's almost like a quasi-pilot, maybe. Who's to say?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And I think as well, you've never seen, like, I mean, with the exception of Teenage Kicks on Teenage E years ago, I don't think there's been anything really kind of set in the Gaeltacht and the Irish language summer camps. And that's such an interesting setting. So I'd be very kind of keen to show that as well, especially with, like, you know, my mum being a Bannatee for so many years and keeping like teenage girls, like, you know what I mean? And it's just like kind of the just innate humour that comes from that as well. So yeah, I would be really wanting to kind of push and get like some sort of sitcom made of it. But I mean, we're just starving artists, so we're hoping for any sort of commission at all.
I know. And that can be the challenge. We heard that from Lisa McGee during the week. Even someone of her stature can be difficult to get an idea televised or backed. All right, listen, thanks very much for that. Really appreciate your time. Good luck with the project. That is Anton Beg O'Kella. All right, our own Shannon Wilkins will be joining us shortly to keep us abreast of what's trending on socials and anything maybe you could keep your eye on for the TV over the weekend. If you've anything like that you want to pass on to us, please do. Thank you so much for your texts. We receive hundreds of texts, and I know for a fact, even from national shows who are broadcasting to the entire country, don't get the kind of interaction and feedback that we get from you, the listener. It is so greatly appreciated. Right, on the issue of the local authority and various schools wishing happy Ramadan, them to people are only looking for votes from Muslims. As a Christian, they're trying to get rid of us. Shame on Donegal County Council. No happy Easter or nothing. You won't get happy Easter in a Muslim country, that's for sure. No one's trying to get rid of you. That's, whether you like this or not, no one's trying to get rid of you. You're in the absolute majority. And, you know, like, I get where you're coming from, and I've tried to play devil's advocate and make sure everyone's views are platformed in relation to this. And I'm not silly. No one's trying to eradicate you. What's happening is that perhaps you're not getting the respect that you feel you deserve, or maybe your belief system isn't, but you're okay. No one's trying to get rid of you. Another, some people search social media looking for a post to be offended by. It's their lifeblood. They then post their abhorrence of the particular post and wait to see how many likes they get. It's all about getting up votes or followers. Social media has messed up society. If these posts were published in the written press, it would pass unnoticed. Another, maybe John McAteer should read the comments. They're not all keyboard warriors. Another, trying to be inclusive, bending over backwards to welcome and accommodate these newcomers. Now, they're not, like, again, right, this is the problem with these types of posts and what they create. These people have been second, third generation people celebrating Ramadan. You know, these are people that are living and working in the community and looking after you and eating beside you in restaurants. And they aren't. This is the problem with these posts. And that's why I don't understand that people don't understand that if you have a platform, there's a responsibility with it, because it's drawing backlash to people who didn't invite this on themselves at all. Morning. Well said, Greg. Thank you for standing up for our Christian religion. So disappointed with the attitude of your panel. Hi, Greg. This is nothing to do with religion. This is the very nature of social media today. No matter what they post, someone will find it offensive. And it's usually those that accuse others of being snowflakes that get their knickers in a twist. That comes in from Gar in Remelton. Well said to Greg just now in the show. About time someone pointed out the imbalance when it comes to celebrating religion. Celebrate them all, including Catholic or none. Local schools are so busy, including minorities, they're absolutely excluding Catholic beliefs in today's world. But it doesn't make it inclusive, because what happens is people might be drawn to that post who are celebrating Ramadan, and then they go through their comments, and how does that make them feel? Okay, so you can phrase it in such a way. You can phrase it in such a way, and it would be of quite easy to do. It's Muslim people, isn't it? Celebrate Ramadan. I'm on eggshells because I don't want to offend anyone. But you say you're in the same post. You say whatever the phraseology is to our friends who celebrate Ramadan, who could be of any religion, by the way, and also to our other friends who also begin Lent. But you see, then you might get is that too simple? Is that not what you would do? You know, like, I wouldn't use my social media in that way. I don't use it perfectly, but I wouldn't, because I would be conscious of the fact that I'm going to pee off people, or I would have to be ultimately responsible for the negative comments that are contained underneath. Stevie says, the Muslim community are tiny in a predominantly Christian country. Sending good wishes is called solidarity, nothing more. The majority feel excluded. That's a laugh. Well, Stevie, I respect what you're saying, and I actually, you know, don't disagree with you, but that's not how the modern world works. We have many people and many organisations that are employed. I would say it's probably probably 30, 40 people and organisations that really spend all of their year with representing minority groups in this county. You know the groups that I'm talking of. And the way you do that is that it is truly inclusive. And the way it is truly inclusive is if you give people no reason to be negative. And that's very, very easily done. You can celebrate them and welcome into the community as part of a broader message. It's literally PR. It's just common sense, because what you're saying is correct, but you can achieve that in a different way, in my opinion. Rightio, now let's chill out a bit, because it's time for Shannon's Scroll Patrol. Shannon's Scroll Patrol. I think you need a jingle. Yeah, okay.
I'm playing the music in my head as you're speaking.
This is radio, my love. Rightio, let's get to see what's happening on the socials. Tyson Fury, I have an interest in this because I'm a boxing fan. I'm not a big fan of his, but anyway, what's the crack?
Mine isn't that much about boxing. So he's currently on his fifth retirement, and I saw a clip of him the last day. His whole retirement, he spent trying to make babies with his wife. Mm. So he says that's why he's enjoyed it so much. And he wants now to have an eighth child. He's got seven. But I'm thinking Tommy Fury and Molly May just announced another pregnancy. Is it a bit of rivalry there?
Yeah, maybe.
Fury versus Fury.
Yeah, well, he's also been recording a Netflix documentary.
He says he's been putting a lot of graft into that. Like, he's like, why not? Why would I not have a child when I work so hard? I can provide for them. And you know what? He's probably right.
Yeah. I wonder how many kids he would have if he was having them.
That's true too. And then his daughter got recently engaged. So is it going to reach a point where his kids and his grandkids are the same age?
Who's to say?
Auntie, uncle.
Okay, well, he needs to focus on his comeback fight now, which is in May, I think. Margot's green eyes, what's this about?
This is one I saw on TikTok. So we've all been for an eye test, right? You know, eye health, very important. But they can get clarifying drops in your eyes if they can't see the back. So that's fine. Some nurse forgot to ask if someone was wearing contact lenses, and the chemical reaction, she ended up with radioactive green eyes.
Oh my God.
Nothing wrong, no vision loss or anything, but it's just like, it really was quite something. You know the nuclear power plant in The Simpsons?
Yes.
It was like that radioactive.
Me and my brother, we went to all of these appointments together with our eyes, but we had to get those dilation drops in. Horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And then it's like, keep your eye open. And then it just keeps shutting.
Indeed. Wuthering Heights.
So I haven't.
Wuthering, sorry. It's Wuthering, isn't it?
Wuthering or Wuthering?
Well, it's spelled Wuthering.
But I think you can say Wuthering.
Can you? Okay.
Margot and Jacob Elordi seem to be in a real relationship. But
this is Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie.
Okay.
But again, they make it look really good on screen, but all their press, everyone's been analysing the body language and them looking at each other. And then even there's a picture of she's turned into him and he's staring at her like he really loves her. It's actually like, whoa. But she got married not that long ago and she has a child.
Okay.
And they're both Australian, so they kind of bond over that.
Good eye, mate.
But I was on a whole TikTok rabbit hole.
Wuthering Heights is a film, isn't it? And apparently it's five stars all over the shop. People love it.
Romance, yeah.
Okay. I see a lot of this whereby you get like Dr. Dre and jazz or this, that, and on. It was inevitable that we'd get hip hop in trad. I presume 50 Cent is not actually doing trad music, but instead AI has been involved. Or tell me.
AI has been involved. I've got a wee clip in there.
Oh, do
just
we? What's it
so
in?
We can listen. It's in WhatsApp.
Okay, one second. You keep talking. Describe it then. What's happened?
So initially, I didn't like it because I was like, oh my God, it's so fake. Leave things as they are. They're already perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I've listened to it a bit more, I actually do quite like it.
Okay, and this is an AI take on 50 Cent trad. Boy, one taste of what I got. One taste. I'll have you spending all you earn. All you got. Keep tapping till you hit the spot. Whoa. You could have it your way. How do you want it? You gonna dance the jigger now, or should I push the drink upon it? Fever's rising, mate. All right, let's go to the
very
next
American
level.
Dance floor jam
packed, hot as a tea. Sounds like, what's your guy's name? Tipsy. It's already been done, like.
Yeah. But the more you listen to it, the more you like it.
Yeah, it's Irish folk rather than trad, I think. But, I mean, what's happening there? It's just a different take on it. I like it. I think it's more than a novelty, actually.
It kind of reminded me of, you know, the film Sinners?
Haven't seen it, but yeah.
So I watched it. Complete waste of time, in my opinion. Maybe someone else loved it. But they tried to link the Irish trad with black music like blues and grass and all that. So it kind of felt like a collaboration of what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it kind of works.
Yeah, but as I say, you know, pour me another shot of whiskey.
Shaboozy.
Yeah, right. That's actually a country version of Tipsy anyway from 50 Cent. So to some extent, you know, the black community have actually already done it themselves rather than cultural appropriation. The Scranzit van.
So,
why are you laughing?
In case anyone hasn't noted, Scran, food, and transit van. Scranzit van.
Scran is a word banned in our house. What? Aaron says, any Scran? And I'm like, no, it's not happening.
No Scranzit van for him then. So it's a group of workmen over in England, and they can cook whatever you want in the van. They've got a wee gas stove, and they've got frying pans. But they have, the van is the filthiest thing you've ever seen.
No.
And they use a pair of scissors to cut up raw chicken breasts, and then they cut up the vegetables and
with
cheese.
Yeah, this is a parody, is it?
I actually can't tell, because the comments are like, oh, you can't be doing that, like salmonella. And he's like, well, it's all getting cooked anyway.
True.
And they don't
true.
Have plates or anything.
So what do you eat it off your hands?
They eat it out of the frying pan. But like, I think if I was in a work van, like, I'd be flat out cooking in it. Like, my dad has a toasty maker that he brings with him and a kettle. At one point he was going to take the air fryer, but he thought that was a step too far.
I don't, if you've got a kettle and a toasty machine in your van, how is an air fryer a step too far?
It's just a bit bulkier, isn't it? It's not as easy. I like
he's already taken this step. He's just switching out appliances at this
George
stage.
George Foreman.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Bring it out too.
Well, don't throw glasses out of stone houses, I think is a phrase that springs to mind there, or something very similar. All right, Daryl. Katie Price is pregnant again.
Allegedly.
Still
don't know if this one's true or not. But it's a wild whirlwind romance. So they got engaged on the 23rd of January, married on the 20th of February. No, today's the 20th of February. So not married like 6 weeks ago or something crazy. And then she already has three kids. As far as I'm aware, Princess and Andre Jr. live with her former husband, yeah. Peter Andre. They don't have much to do with her. But she's always posting about Harvey as well.
Well, he's content, really. Okay, that's fine. I don't think they're going to be together in a year. I remember Katie Price back in the day, you know, and just to see. Well, anyway, that's her body, her choice, right? Chinese New Year, year of the
horse.
Yay.
So we're all going to be going into more powerful versions of ourselves. The snake kind of says it all, doesn't it? Like slithery, slimy.
Yeah.
Everyone's
untrustworthy.
Trying to get you, yeah. But I'm actually born in the year of the snake, so I don't know if that was good or bad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, but we're in the year of the horse now.
And then all I kept seeing was don't wash your hair at the start of Chinese New Year.
Why?
Because you'll have bad luck. You're washing away all your bad luck.
Oh, no.
But I really needed to wash my hair on Tuesday night. So I waited until 11:30 to get into the shower. And I was like, I'm sorry, I can't stay up any longer.
But that's just because you're contrary. Normally it's dry shampoo, isn't it?
Well, it depends how far you can stretch, Greg. But it was really bothering me. And I'm the same. If someone tells me not to do something, I have to do it. So I was sitting at home like this. I was like, I can't wash my hair. I can't wash my hair.
Don't push the button. All right,
but
okay.
But
anyway,
thing,
did you do it? What's the best thing, sorry?
Is the food. So they all gather together as families. Everyone brings a dish. You can pick your own sauce of what you want to bring.
Sounds lovely.
So that's what I did last
okay.
night.
Super stuff. Well done. Shannon Wilkins back next week with more Shannon's Scroll Patrol. That's where we leave it. We're going to be back with you on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening all week.